Welcome to Reading the Grid, the podcast fueling your Formula One passion. Each week, we explore the stories behind books, movies, and shows that highlight the history of this dynamic sport. Buckle up for a fast-paced journey through Formula One. Now let's jump into it. Drive to Survive is a Netflix documentary series that provides a behind-the-scenes look into Formula One racing. This series follows each Formula One season, offering viewers interviews, racing footage, and team dynamic. Today, we will highlight how drivers manage the pressure of competition, both on and off the track, dive into key moments, and discuss the significant impact that Drive to Survive has had on the lives of its subjects and fans.
The season that we are viewing of Drive to Survive, which we'll also refer to as DTS, covers the 2018 racing season. You will meet most dynamic personalities that ultimately become the most popular figures in Formula One in DTS era. The show also shows capricious nature of the sport affecting the financial fortunes or misfortunes of certain teams and how it affects development of cars and drivers' careers. This season also tries to expand on how mentally tough drivers have to be, since the highs are very high and the lows are very low. And that's a direct Christian Horner quote. This season also spotlights rivalries within teams and between teams. It provides gentle introductions to the basic of Formula One races, especially the midfield, which are not the most successful teams. And it also highlights the danger of the sport by detailing some truly spectacular crashes. For me, this is the best season of Formula One. It is possible that I think that way because it is the first season that I watched. A lot of it stayed with me, and upon rewatch, I did not realize how much action was included. Instead of each episode featuring a separate team, which became the structure of some future seasons, they put a spotlight on just six teams, which created a narrative that carried from episode to episode. And of course, this season introduced Charles Leclerc, and the episode featuring him, which I will discuss in a lot more detail later on, made me his fans. Overall, this season was very dramatic. However, future seasons have just as dramatic, if not more, and significant events that happened, but there are not as many lulls in action as there are in future seasons.
2018 was a very exciting season, but I think the 2024 season, which will be revealed in Drive to Survive Season 7, will definitely rival the drama and excitement of 2018.
I cannot wait to see that action.
Me too. That's going to be a fun one. The impact of Drive to Survive on personalities such as Daniel Ricciardo, Christian Horner, and Gunther Steiner. Daniel Ricciardo, the star of the show, Ricciardo was portrayed as the star. He is so fun-loving when he said, "My name is Daniel Ricciardo and I'm a car mechanic." His personality and charm and wit really struck the right chords with fans and helped him gain popularity, particularly here in the U.S.,
I agree. And in terms of drivers, he is an absolute star. But for me, the tragic backstory, undeniable talent, inherent charm and kindness, and the fairy tale ending with him joining Ferrari makes Charles Leclerc also the star of the season.
His story is very touching and you can't help but root for him, especially having him be the second youngest driver in Ferrari's history. It's pretty incredible. And what a tribute to his godfather. Christian Horner's persona was portrayed as a ruthless team principal behind the scenes. His decision-making, along with his diplomatic yet strict demeanor and balancing Red Bull's business and sporting interests, was revealed to audiences.
In terms of ruthlessness, I will take your Christian Horner and will raise you one Lawrence Stroll, or Papa Stroll, as he's affectionately or not so affectionately known. Although this season he comes across more as a concerned parent who just wants to make sure that his son succeeds in a guaranteed seat in Formula One, obviously with the intention that he can perform the best as possible.
As we discussed from last week, Gunther Steiner at Haas definitely emerged as a fan favorite character in the F1 paddock due to his very straightforward personality. Even though Haas as a team has had its share of ups and downs under his leadership, the American-Italian enjoyed his newfound stardom thanks to Netflix Drive to Survive. If you didn't listen to last week's episode, you might want to check it out because we dive into his best-selling book, Surviving to Drive.
You should definitely check that episode out if you haven't already. And I agree completely with you about Gunther being the breakout star of the season, as well as Daniel Ricciardo. Another personality that I think really broke through, although he's not a driver or a team principal, is William Buxton. He became incredibly well known for his very exaggerated pauses, which I'm demonstrating, and having the most mind-numbing, dumbed-down explanation of how anything in Formula One worked. He's been parodied multiple times, and there's been tons of memes that are still used to this day on how ridiculously he delivers the information in DTS. I do appreciate that in interviews, he admits that he also thinks it's ridiculous, and he's not above making fun of himself. Unfortunately, last week, it was announced that he's leaving Formula One and he'll be commentating for IndyCar, but we still have these DTS episodes to enjoy his very entertaining commentary.
For any listeners who have not yet had the luxury of binging season one or the entire six seasons that are on Netflix, the remainder of the podcast will be giving spoilers away. That is your warning as a listener. Here come the spoilers.
In terms of the breakout moments of this season, for me, there were definitely two big ones. One was Daniel Ricciardo deciding to go to Renault after spending 10 years in Red Bull. And for Renault and Red Bull parting ways, with Red Bull choosing Honda as their new engine supplier. One of the scenes that stayed in my mind is Cyril Abiteboul, who is the team principal of Renault, telling Christian Horner, who's the team principal of Red Bull, as they were waiting to go into a press conference, that he now lost his driver and his engine to Renault. And the look on Christian's face, which is very unsure and a bit chastened, was extremely satisfying if you follow Christian's story arc through all the seasons of Drive to Survive.
I could not agree with you more about the Daniel Ricciardo decision to switch. Knowing what we know now, it was painful to watch at the time. And then just realizing what a horrible decision in the long run that was for him in his career. He really is a talented driver. Whatever those frustrations he was having, 10 years of loyalty. And it was interesting, the entire time Horner kept saying, we hope to retain Daniel. Like, that was a huge shock to that team that he chose to leave. It was surprising given the fact that they did change the engine and we're going to have a new engine. You would think that Daniel would have given it at least one more year, especially if it is true the proposed renewal of his contract was everything that he wanted, that he still chose to walk away and go to the team who was providing the engine that was giving Red Bull such trouble.
I think there could be other factors as well. So yes, I know Daniel obviously was concerned with the engine. However, Honda at the time was complete unknown. There was no guarantee that if he stayed with Red Bull, the car would have been that much better. I forgot about it, but I thought it was really telling, is that his contract, I mean, they didn't specify the contract existed at the time of the contract they were offering, was actually less than Max Verstappen's contract. It's got to be hurtful that somebody who's so new to the sport has a better contract than he does. So for him, I think it's justified in his mind that Max is the golden child and the future of the team. And that's what they put all of their
eggs in the Max basket.
Correct.
Well, I can see that. I could see how that would be a big hit to an ego. So I would feel slighted if I were him. And I guess Renault would be the devil that you know compared to Honda.
I just want to say that another thing that really, really hurt me watching this trajectory play out is when Christian Horner says it's the biggest mistake he's ever made and he's going to regret it. And even though Daniel Ricciardo never voiced it himself, at the end, he knew it probably was a mistake and it was the biggest mistake of his life. So I just hate that Christian Horner was proven right.
No one probably hates it more than Daniel Ricciardo since he is not on the grid anymore. And he's such a personality and talent. And the fact that, you know, 2019, that really changed the trajectory of Red Bull. Like, they were in the fight. They were number three in the constructors in 2018. If he would have just hung on a little bit more, but I do understand how that would feel if you have been there for so long and then they're bringing in this new talent with Max. And I know there's been discussion about how that's portrayed in the show versus how their relationship really is slash was in real life. And it is curious, and maybe it's age, immaturity, and time, as later seasons will show. You know, Max at one point said, yes, I would like to have Ricardo as my teammate again.
When he knew Ricardo was not going to beat him.
Right.
Other breakup moment for me was the whole Force India situation. So Force India managed to go into administration, got rescued by consortium led by our once and future villain, Papa Stroll. And that meant that one of their drivers, Esteban Ocon or Sergio Perez, had to be let go. And the way that the Netflix series portrayed it was really cool because the twist and turn started in episode 5 because it was shown as this very successful but very lean and efficient team that operated on very little but achieved great result, then goes into administration, has a whole new change of ownership, and in episode 6 we pick up with this dilemma of which drivers are they going to keep because nepotism rules and Papa's troll son has to have a seat. It just extremely, extremely riveting because they show all of this drama through the eyes of Ocon, who has a great story because he comes from one of the most humble backgrounds in Formula One, and he doesn't have the big sponsors that Perez has. And so he just goes through hoping that something will work out in his favor. And I mean, it is a spoiler section, so we can give it away that it did not work for him at the time because he ends up with having not a seat in 2019.
It was difficult to watch all of that unfold. And it was hard because you're rooting for SD Bestie for him to get the seat. It's a shame that money makes such a big difference in these situations. And Hamilton even commented in a press release when Ocon qualified third and said, you know, he deserves a seat. He's a talented driver. How things played out between him and Perez, inner team fighting between teammates, was so telling about personalities. And I realize that your teammate is your toughest competitor because you're fighting against them first and foremost in a way to keep your seat and then the grid. But at the same time, you're supposed to be working as teammates. That is such an interesting relationship to be in with somebody.
And one thing that I think is interesting is that because, again, spoiler alert from real life and future episodes of DTS, Ocon ends up back on the grid and his relationship with teammates does not get better. In fact, at a future season, DTS devotes 2 episodes to that intra-team dynamic. This is just the tip of the iceberg. This is, I think, Ocon at his most likable because he gets more ruthless and becomes a little bit more obnoxious, which is interesting because his story is the most relatable. We covered a lot of the drama that happened off the track, but for me, most dramatic on-track incident for me was not Fernando Alonso's car going over the top of Charles Leclerc's car.
That was insanely intense to watch, especially knowing everything that Charles Leclerc has gone through with Jules and having him in an accident like that, your heart stopped.
Exactly. So for me, that wasn't the most dramatic on-track incident. What was for me was the race featuring the other Spaniard on the grid in 2018 in episode 2, which was Carlos Sainz in Baku. So at the time he was driving Renault and they were showing him going through the grid, advancing car by car, but not all of it was him overtaking. There were all these crashes that happened in front of him that he managed to drive away from without any incident. And the fact that they keep the focus on him and his journey, as opposed to Max and Daniel Ricciardo colliding, then there's Grosjean crashing as he's going behind a safety car and weaving to get heat into his tires. And finally, when Bottas gets a puncture, which could have led to a lot like an on-track debris that would hamper Science, but it didn't. So that whole sequence was extremely well done.
It was almost like they took cues from Lightning McQueen in the very first Cars movie when they're like, McQueen is in the wreckage, he's never gonna survive this, which is kind of funny.
It is, but it's just interesting that that when that is not the focus, you're like, what happened? And then it keeps going. I also loved Leclerc versus Pierre Gasly in Singapore Grand Prix on track battle because it was interwoven very seamlessly with their battle in cards as children. And throughout that sequence, which is beautiful and very interesting visually, we talk about how Leclerc is very pessimistic about having friends on the grid. And Gasly is talking about how I don't understand why drivers can't be friends. What's so unusual about that? And that is super ironic considering how Pierre Gasly is going to act with one of his childhood friends who ends up being his teammate. And in season 6, 2 episodes of DTS was devoted to that. The other thing that's very notable is that although Max is not shown in the best of lights this season, and it actually got so bad that he refused to participate for the next couple of seasons, I think he is accurately represented. And a lot of what he went through in season 1, at least what was shown, reminded me of how he acted in 2024. For instance, he goes on this rant when his power unit failed in Hungary Grand Prix. And there is a very, very famous rant that he unleashed on everyone in Hungary Grand Prix 2024. And I really hope DTS was in Hungary because that was, I mean, that rant pretty much made that race. There was also, they showed the shoving incident, which I first heard about a lot, saw a lot of memes and GIFs where I couldn't figure out where was this from. So they showed this. That happened in Brazil. And then, which basically with Verstappen pushing Ocon until Ocon like almost fell. And in the press conference, they show Max saying, well, he triggered me to push him.
I am shocked that he didn't get a penalty or that wasn't discussed. You have Christian Horner doing coverage for him and saying, we never condone violence. But he got in his face and he said he was asking for it and that sort of thing. And that is where his immaturity really showed, and it was disappointing to see someone at his level behaving like that.
I agree. And I'm glad you brought up Christian Horner because it is fascinating that in Abu Dhabi, which is, I know Aaron is your favorite race, obviously, for so many reasons, but in Abu Dhabi 2018, they showed, even though they didn't talk about the strategy, they showed that they obviously used a strategy that prioritized Max because they undercut Daniel Ricciardo, having him pit first, which meant that when Max was coming out later on fresher tires and would obviously be ahead. So at the end of that race, Christian Horner went on this effusive praise of Max and his character, which is so hypocritical because it wasn't his character that made him ahead in that particular race. It was the fact that you did a strategy that put him ahead in the race.
Which makes sense. I mean, you have a driver leaving. You're not going to prioritize and make him have a better race than the driver who's sticking with you. I understand that. It was just unfortunate because, you know, Ricardo and all of his fans wanted him to have a better race. Every fan of a driver leaving or changing teams wants that race to be one of their best, so everyone leaves on a high note.
Well, I just want you to think about Lewis Hamilton's last race last year and how Toto Wolff reacted. And it wasn't to praise George Russell's character because, spoiler alert for the race, until the very last moment of the last race, George was ahead.
He was until the last corner. And then Hamilton went around the outside and overtook him. And that was how that one ended.
And George also implied that he let him have it, even though if you watch the on-track action, he didn't.
He didn't. No. In the episode, William Buxton also suggested that Red Bull would regret investing in Max so much. That obviously did not age well at all. Back to your comment about Max not being shown in the best of light. I agree with you. That's his personality. That's who he was at the time. He's aggressive. He matures in later seasons. Young Max is cocky and has a lot of confidence, but it's not making him friends on the grid.
We talked about that press conference in Brazil where Max said he was triggered to push Ocon. Buxton said it best. Max needs to learn what battles to fight and has a lot of maturing to do. And he has definitely matured and he definitely picks his battle, but he continues to battle and he continues to show signs of immaturity.
My husband likes to remind me that if I watched a young Lewis Hamilton, I would probably be saying the same things about him. I see him now in a much more mature light with more composure in how he handles things. We saw that a little bit with Lando Norris and some of his comments and how they come off. I think that, you know, you sometimes say what is supposed to be only said inside your head. Actually, use your inside voice and they say it out loud at times. One of the personal reactions that I had on the broader narrative of the season was to give Christian Horner credit for actually investing in a young driver. It really paved the way to give other teams to make that switch, because historically that's not what was done. They were hesitant to bring in such young drivers and give them a chance fresh in those seats. I mean, Lando Norris is the youngest driver to go in for McLaren that we see at the end. And Charles is the second youngest driver to drive for Ferrari in its history. So I'll give Red Bull a little bit of credit where credit is due with investing so heavily in a young Max.
Oh, I agree. And I think Toto Wolff regrets to this day and has some of the actions that he's done in the past year explained by the fact that he missed out on having Max in Mercedes. But I also think it matters what kind of talent comes through, because obviously Max has the raw talent that easily spotted. And of course, you want to give him all the opportunities as soon as possible to make sure that you get the most out of him as soon as possible as well. In the future season of DTS, you'll see some talent come in and show right away that it was extremely the right call to get them into Formula One that early. And then in future seasons, you will not see as many rookies come in, because I think the talent pool at that point was not that deep. And the people coming through did not have as much raw talent and couldn't show the result as quickly as Max did or Charles did. After 2019, and until this upcoming 2025 season, we don't see as many rookies, and we don't see the rookies of that caliber coming through.
We have talked a lot about on track, off track, and we touched on some of the team drama. Let's get into the team dynamics. I would say, based on the standings, the most cohesive teams in the 2018 season opted not to participate in the show, Ferrari and Mercedes. Out of the ones that participated in season one, there is so much drama among every driver pairing. It is hard to say who has the best dynamic. I think, Ina, that we should rate our top three most contentious pairings and go from there. What do you think? Who tops the list for you?
To paraphrase Tolstoy's opening line, Anna Karenina, each cohesive team is the same. Each dysfunctional team is dysfunctional in its own way. So for me, the team of Ocon, Perez, and Force India would definitely be at the top. As we talked briefly before, there's such a contrast in personality and circumstances. For instance, Ocon is one of the tallest drivers on the grid. Perez is a lot shorter. Ocon was only 22 in his second season in 2018. Perez was 28. And in his seventh season. There's also the difference between their personal circumstances, because Perez has the backing of the richest man in Mexico, Carlos Slim, and his father's a politician, so we can assume he was well off. Whereas Ocon, as we detailed earlier, came from very humble circumstances. So nothing exemplifies this better than the Mexican Grand Prix, where Perez took a private helicopter to get to the track, and Ocon had to take a regular car and get stuck in traffic. Their animosity is totally understandable. Again, they don't really have that much in common. They're both fighting for their place on the grid. As will be shown in the future, Ocon has a tendency to crash into his teammates. I also wanted to point out that it was very interesting that after hearing that Ocon could not secure a place on the grid and will be out of Force India at the end of the season, Perez said that one day it will be me, which is very prescient of him, because that's exactly what happened to him in 2024.
I think he also self-sabotaged a little bit in 2024. We'll talk about that a little bit more, because he renewed his contract. Things were going well, then they weren't going well. It was the car. It was a lot of things. I'm very curious how season seven portrays that when we get to review season seven with him. But yes, he does lose his seat at the end of 2024. While we're talking about heated rivalries and dysfunctional teams, I would say the competition between Renault and Haas throughout the season was highlighted really well. Netflix did a great job of storytelling and narrating that tension and weaving that throughout the entire season. And then it really comes to a head and down to the final lap. They really drive home that drama and make it exciting for fans to see, especially between Kevin Magnussen and Hülkenberg. And then when Grosjean goes out, they make the call to the stewards to have them review Carlos' sights, which then gives him a penalty. And so it really shows how cutthroat it is. They had said in episode 4, this is the piranha club. It's worse than swimming with sharks. And it's true. The teams have so many different strategies. It really is very cutthroat, which also brings to some of the drama and excitement, which is fun to watch. I thought they did a great job of really holding on to that dramatic tension in that race until the very last lap. So how about we get into our favorite episodes and scenes? Clearly, you have mentioned episode 8 a few times. Why don't we let you have the floor, Ina?
Buckle up, as this might take a minute. So episode 8 was where we are introduced to Alfa Romeo's Sauber team and their rookie driver for 2018, Charles Leclerc. I do not love this episode only because of Leclerc, but I think it tells a full story in one episode in the most emotionally intense and satisfying way possible. It has the most dramatic opening of any episode, definitely this season, if not most of the other season. And that is, they mention Ayrton Senna, who's considered one of the best, if not the best, Formula One drivers in history, and the driver whom everyone on the grid claims is their favorite, and his death in 1994. So that's just the beginning of it. And then it goes through the personal tragedies that Leclerc endured. He lost his godfather and friend, Jules Bianchi, to whom this episode was actually dedicated, in 2015, when he succumbed to the injury sustained in the 2014 race in Japan. Then they show the footage of the aftermath of this accident during the race and Leclerc at Jules' funeral. He also lost his father at age 17. And Buxton mentions that Leclerc competed in F2 48 hours later. He won that race, which happened to be in Baku, after dropping to the last place during the race. So that predisposes you to right away know how insanely talented and mentally strong he is. It then shows Leclerc's journey through all the races in 2018, where he's taking this car that is considered one of the worst on the grid. I believe they were the last the year before. And he keeps putting it in positions and getting points when that was not the expectation. And his teammate, Marcus Ericsson,
didn't do half as well
as Leclerc in the same car. And that is the reason what we mentioned, that your teammate is your biggest opponent. Because with every other driver on the grid, you can always say, well, they have the better car, so of course they're doing better. But if it's your teammate who has exactly the same car, although we can argue whether they're truly exactly the same, then you kind of have nowhere to hide. The episode then shows you that he is from Monaco. He watched races as a kid from his best friend's apartment. And they do a very cinematic view of the vistas of Monaco. And with the cliffs and the yachts and the Mediterranean, it looks absolutely gorgeous and sets you to really get your aesthetic high from it. And they also contrast his journey with Ericsson, who was with the team for 5 years. And although it comes off, in the words of Gunter Steiner, as a good guy, but there's really nothing that special about him on and off the track, so he doesn't pop as much as Leclerc in the same episode. The best twist in the episode happens when Kimi Räikkönen is announced as leaving Ferrari and joining Sauber, and that creates, first, a vacancy in Ferrari, but also tells the Sauber team one of the drivers have to go. As an aside, I absolutely love the moment in press conference where they show Kimi being asked, so why Sauber? Like, it was his choice to leave Ferrari. And Kimi answers, and he was very, always monosyllabic, why not?
He was so deadpan in that moment. The look on his face.
I just want to say it is a shame that Ferrari did not participate in season 1, because Sebastian Vettel and Kimi Räikkönen were hilarious as teammates based on all the interactions that are available on YouTube. And I just think that was such a wasted opportunity, because Kimi is always deadpan and Vettel is very funny. So the catharsis of this whole very eventful episode happens in the last moments when Leclerc is revealed that he's going to Ferrari. And you see everyone in the paddock, not just from his team or from Ferrari, but everyone being so happy for him. And I dare anyone to watch this episode and not feel euphoric for what's happening to Leclerc. I also really like the fact that you get to see Fred Vasseur, who is currently the team principal of Ferrari, being the CEO and team principal of Sauber. He looks very stern, as we know from watching his interactions in future seasons and also on the grid. He's very humorous. I just think this episode has everything. We mentioned earlier, the highs are insanely highs. The lows are extremely tragic. And so you cannot go through this episode and not become a fan of Leclerc.
I am not going to challenge your episode and try to rival it with an explanation of another episode that could possibly top that one. But I will share a few moments that stuck out for me within other episodes. The Daniel Ricciardo win in Monaco is a big one for me. It was so unfortunate that pit stop cost him the win. I guess it was 2016. So for him to have redemption in that was exciting to see. He is such a likable character. And for him to have had that defeat and then come back, that was really exciting. And I have to tell you, actually seeing Haas get a win when Kevin Magnussen finished fourth and got them some solid points. And I know they were so close in the fight between them and Renault to come in fourth or fifth in the constructors that year. And they did come in fifth. They had some good momentum. They're a young team. And Steiner is such a character. So to see them have something positive happen where he could not feel like hiding on the, you know, the pit wall, that was good to see for them too.
And one thing about Daniel's win in Monaco, so extremely memorable. And I have to say, until you know who's win in Monaco last year, I thought it was the most entertaining celebration I've ever seen of a win. Like, it was so memorable. But as we mentioned again earlier, it was also heartbreaking because I knew that was the highlight of his career. And that is extremely disappointing because I think he could have and should have done better.
I'm glad he got to enjoy that belly flop into the pool at the end because you know that had to hurt a little bit, but he seemed to enjoy it. So having him have that celebration was good. You just wish that there are more of them in his career. Let's get into some wildcard topics about this season. Why don't we go through either pick a best team radio moment, most unexpected plot twist, funniest scene. Let's give some superlatives out for season one.
Okay, I can go first. So I will go with the best, but also the most unexpected radio moment, which is Daniel Ricciardo's angry radio when Perez and Force India overtook him and when Bottas ran into him. First of all, you could hear the disdain in Daniel's voice. He's like, Force India, like, how dare they? And then when Bottas ran into him, I never heard him that angry. And also it was very satisfying when he managed to get ahead of Bottas in a damaged car. Like, I almost feel it's a theme for him because he won Monaco, he had a damaged car. He overtook Bottas, he had a damaged car. So maybe that's what needs to happen for him to be that good, is that he has to have a damage in the car where he forgets about everything else and just goes for it. It's not necessarily superlative, but I call it lost to time, which is nuggets that I either completely forgot about or did not pay attention to when I watched it the first time. But they definitely mean a lot more now. So for instance, Lance Stroll actually called himself a paid driver. Mazepin appeared as a reserve driver for Force India. Wait until we get into season four of DTS. Atma Safnauer, who ended up being very memorably team principal of Alpine, was the team principal of Force India. That man cannot escape drama. But we will definitely talk more about him when we get to season five. I also absolutely loved the moment where Alonso, who was driving for McLaren and announced his first retirement, he was asked to walk slower because he was going into a conference and he was arriving too soon. And he deadpans when he answers, oh, so at McLaren's pace. The final moment that also did not remember but was extremely hilarious, they had Nico Hülkenberg meet with kids, and the kids keep asking him, oh, so how many titles did you win? He didn't win any. Have you been on the podium? To this day, he hasn't been on a podium. And so they ask him, so how are you famous? Which I thought was, you know, from the mouth of babes, a very true statement.
Let me hold this mirror up right in front of you and face the reality that you have had more years on the grid with zero wins than any driver ever. That is not a statistic I would want to be the holder of.
And remember, this was six seasons ago.
I am going to go with the most awkward superlative, which you did address, but that is between Christian and Cyril when he makes the comment about needing a new driver and a new engine. That was cringeworthy watching it. My unexpected plot twist, having a team owner be charged with fraud and money laundering, was not on my bingo card.
If you are surprised by a team owner being charged with fraud, please look up Gene Haas.
The other thing that they touched on a little bit and then they pulled back on was the Alonso McLaren relationship and how a lot of drivers and other teams even thought it was concerning that Alonso was having such a hand and they were only hiring people that he liked, that he wanted to work with, that it seemed like he was in control. And I know there is speculation that is he going to buy into the team? I think it was a good thing for McLaren that Alonso decided to retire after that season. Obviously, they announced at the end of season one that we have this new exciting talent in Lando Norris, and we know where that goes, which is exciting to see as they develop him. But for the tide to switch at McLaren, I think it was a good thing for Alonso to step aside.
Absolutely. And I have to say that notice that they did not only show Lando Norris, but they also showed George Russell. They did miss another rookie who joined 2019, but we will address it in DTS season two.
As we wrap up our discussion on season one of Drive to Survive, let's hit on our overall takeaways from the impact of the season and how it sets the stage for the next season and how that ties into current F1 events.
I think it sets up the stage perfectly because those personalities that continue on for 2019, you are now invested and want to see what happens. So from the personal standpoint, when I was watching it the first time, seeing Leclerc getting to Ferrari, yes, it's a triumphant moment, but I wanted to see, and then what happened to him? Because so I was watching it at the end of 2023 and I purposely did not look him up because I wanted to watch all the available seasons to see his progression. Is he still with Ferrari? What's going on? What is going to happen with Haas? Did not expect what happened to Haas happened to Haas. And you know, it's just the circus just kept going. And so I wanted to be part of it and see what happened next.
Christian Horner hit the nail on the head when he said F1 is addicting. It draws you in. Once you're hooked, you're hooked. And based on the amount of races, how it consumes our day-to-day conversation, the fact that we're launching a podcast, hats off to Christian Horner because he got that one right.
Well, I'm not going to give him all the credit. In fact, the following is something that I either heard or read, so I cannot claim ownership of this phrase, but somebody said that Drive to Survive is pot and actually watching F1 races is the heroin that keeps you coming back for more.
Wherever you heard or read that, that's right up there with Christian Horner. They both hit the nail on the head and are completely accurate, at least for both of our experiences and the amount of fans that Drive to Survive generated. It really is fascinating what the impact has been on American fans. I read somewhere most of the demographics for those who are watching Drive to Survive are viewers between 18 and 29. Most of the new fans are from the US, 37%, I believe, 12 from the UK and 9 from Australia. It has been credited with helping increase the number of Formula One fans in the US. There was a 2022 poll that found 53% of adult US F1 fans said the show was the reason they became interested in F1, which is pretty significant if you think about the impact that this show has had on the sport. It's phenomenal to see it unfold in real life. The storytelling that they do in the show, they really have done a good job highlighting the drama, really making you feel like you're either on the track or in the car. And it's just a pretty amazing thing what the show has done for the sport.
They make it a character-driven story. And so you are investing in the character, you're investing in the story, and they dole out those nuggets of information that you need to keep track of what's going on track. They do a very good balancing act, focusing on the story and giving you just enough information to feel informed and interested to see what happens next.
Exactly. Which next week we will cover season two. But for now,
we are very happy to introduce our new segment called Pop Note. This is intended to be a recurring segment where we invite pets of the paddock The Pop in Pup Notes to give us their insights on what is happening in the world of F1. It will become a regular feature of the podcast once the 2025 race season starts, so we thought we would give you a preview from our special furry friends reviewing the F1 Grid Does Secret Santa 2024. Leo and Roscoe, take it away.
I am Leo Leclerc, and you may know my papa, Charles Leclerc. I'm here with my friend and mentor, Roscoe Hamilton, whose papa is the one and only seven-time world champion, Lewis Hamilton.
First of all, it is Sir Lewis Hamilton, and second of all, he is an eight-time world champion.
Eight? I'm not so good at mathematics, but on the 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, I always heard that he was seven-time world champion. Wasn't his last championship in 2020?
He has always been and will always be an eight-time world champion, and he won in 2021. As I have told you many, many times, do not ever bring up Abu Dhabi 21, ever.
Oh, bien sûr. Roscoe, you are an English bulldog, n'est-ce pas?
Yes, I am, and my pedigree is impeccable. And you are Golden Dachshund?
Oui, and my pedigree is somewhere. I'm sure my papa did not just pick the first puppy he saw. Anyway, we are here to discuss the F1 Grid's Secret Santa 2024, which was the best ever.
You only think that it was the best because of the present that Charles received on your behalf.
Exactement. Yuki, who thought of me first before deciding on which present to give Papa, is going to be my favorite driver. And from now on, well, after my papa, your papa, Oscar Piastri, who's my frère, Pierre Gasly, Simba is a friend after all.
What about Charles's former teammate, Carlos Sainz? I thought you liked him.
I did, until he said that my papa is too obsessed with me. What is too obsessed? There is no such thing. It seems that Carlos is a hater. Quel dommage. So Yuki before Carlos and Red Bull should be ashamed for not giving either of them a seat.
Okay, I'll give it to you on best gift for now. But why don't you tell me about the best reaction from the drivers on their present?
Well, I thought the best reaction was Pierre Gasly to pedal tennis attire from Lance Stroll. Pierre was genuinely excited, and he remembered Lance's gift for a few years ago, which was an actual padded racket. Now, normally, anything connected to pedal, I think, is a lazy gift, which we'll get into it. But I thought Pierre was genuinely happy and had a great reaction. What about you, Roscoe? Whose reaction do you thought was the best?
I enjoyed Alex Albon. He was very excited about his Panda Golf Club cover, since apparently, even though he guessed incorrectly, but he seemed genuinely excited to be able to have that.
Remind me, who gave him this gift?
Valtteri, because it even came with a photo of his bum.
That was adorable. Absolutely. I think that was a very thoughtful gift. It talked about Albon's passion for golf and his love for pandas. Perfect. Combining two best things that he likes. So who do you think had the most thoughtful gift?
Oh, it had to be Oscar giving Liam Lawson the Lightning McQueen. I have never seen a grown man so excited to get a toy designed for a four-year-old.
Yes, it's so amazing. And Liam Lawson is not even the youngest rookie that's going to be on the 2025 grid. But he acted like he was my age, and I'm on just one.
Exactly. He was very, very excited about that. Although I wish he would have gotten it out of the box so we could have chased it around. That would have been a bit more fun.
I agree. So I think the most thoughtful gift was from my papa to Esteban Ocon, the remote control car. Now, it's also the most thoughtful considered how lazy his gift was last year. The year before, as you know, I wasn't even born yet, but I've seen the video and it's cringe inducing. He literally took the first thing he could find, which is Bottas' calendar, and gave it to Zhao, Bottas's teammate. If Leclerc had the calendar, obviously Zhou had the calendar. They even played that video again this time around. So after that very low point, I was extremely excited that he got Esteban Ocon, obviously something he was into. And I wish we could chase that car around.
Oh, that would have been fun. It would have almost been as good as when your papa's former teammate had to wear the giant chili costume because his gift giver did win points. And that's what he said. If Zhao wins points or Saba, I will put on the giant chili costume. And he had to. How funny was that?
That was hilarious. I kind of wish other drivers would get it on there and Zhao would keep getting points every time somebody said, if you get points, I'll do something crazy. Like my papa wearing that banana costume, again, before my time, but it's hilarious.
Too funny. So there were some great gift givers. There also seemed to be some very lazy gift givers. We saw quite a few related to paddle. Well, who do you think was the laziest gift?
It's got to be George Russell to Lando Norris. Now, Alex Albon gave Oscar Piastri the same gift, i.e. paddle lessons, which was extremely lazy. But at least Oscar acted like he didn't mind it. Lando was so offended, super offended. So I think, well, he had the worst reaction for sure, but also because the gift was extremely lazy, insulting. And I'm not sure if George was trying to be funny, but it wasn't funny. And we have to stop relying on paddle for gifts.
I agree, because I don't even know if paddle was spelled correctly. I mean, I am a bulldog, but I can't recall if all the correct letters were on there, first of all. And then Lando wanted to send it back. Don't re-gift or do that. That is just poor manners, at least on the English side of things. And George Russell should have known better about that one. Although your papa's former teammate did buy his gift clearly at the airport because the writing on the modeling clay that he gave to Franco Colapinto was in Arabic.
Well, it doesn't matter when you buy the gift. I actually thought it was fun. I did not appreciate Franco throwing the red out. I mean, you know everyone loves Ferrari, so at some point he might want to be in the car. Do you think they will not remember that he threw the red clay off the balcony?
Oh, that will be forever remembered. Don't worry. The Italians don't forget a thing.
Agree. So I don't know. I don't think Colapinto will ever be a Ferrari driver. You heard it here first.
You did. And I also don't think it's the last that we'll see the calendar of Valtteri's bottom. I have a feeling it will make its way back next year.
It would be interesting since he's not going to be on the grid, but I still think that Max's gift to Valtteri last year, again, the year before I was even born, was extremely interesting because it was an art book with all the famous bottoms substituted with Valtteri's bottoms from his calendar. It was so thoughtful and very, obviously took a long time to do. I don't think Max did it. So it made me very sad that Max did not participate this year.
I agree. And my dad's never participates. And I have to say, based on his attention to detail, I personally think he would be the most thoughtful gift giver to anybody. He always gives me the best gifts.
He does. He is very attentive. And I think he's very generous. So I can just imagine the gift. Although if he could give my papa new pants, I would be personally grateful.
I think that will definitely be happening this year because, as you know, my dad's has an incredible sense of fashion and that can only rub off on your papa.
If only, that would be magnifique. We do have to issue a correction from last week's episode. I stated that Lewis and Charles were two of three drivers to win their home Grand Prix, when in fact, they were the only ones to win their home races in the 2024 season.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us today. We really hope you enjoyed our recap of Drive to Survive Season 1 and the debut of Pop notes. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an update.
We'd also love to hear from you, whether it's your thoughts on today's episode, your suggestions for F1 books, shows, or movies to explore, or a shout out to your favorite pet of the paddock. Connect with us on Instagram, YouTube, or X, or drop us an email at readingthegrid@gmail.com. We want your ideas to fuel the podcast, so don't be shy.
Thanks for joining us on Reading the Grid. Until next time, keep your engines running and your pages turning. See you soon.